Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C. Malian voters go to the polls on Sunday to decide whether to accept a new constitution.
The president has declared today as a holiday so that people can go and collect their electoral cards. People are very eager for the election to come.
Sierra Leone's main opposition, All People's Congress, or APC, calls on the police to immediately release all political detainees and supporters without preconditions.
For every time people come out to demonstrate peacefully, they will attack them, they will unleash police officers, military personnel, police officers with arms.
And Zambia's main opposition party says attempts to deregister the party is unconstitutional and an attack on the country's democracy.
The law is very clear insofar as it demands that for an organization to be registered, the only requirement is the provision of a minimum of 10 office bearers, their names, and their national registration card numbers.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Mali voters go to the polls on Sunday to decide whether to accept a newly drafted constitution. Analysts say the document is likely to be approved after prominent religious leaders called on their supporters to review it. Authorities say the outcome of the referendum will be announced within 72 hours after polls close on Sunday. Meanwhile, opposition groups expressed concern that the new document may pave the way for military leader Colonel Assimi Goïta to run for office. The leader of the military junta has yet to declare whether he will seek election after the referendum. Mohamed Golfa is an independent journalist in Mali. He talks to me about expectations of Malian voters and the latest developments.
The population here is very enthusiastic about the elections. In fact, today, the president has declared today as a holiday so that people can go and collect their electoral cards. People are very eager for the election to come. They believe that the new draft constitution that they are going to vote for is going to ameliorate the security and as well as the food and every situation that Malians are facing. The challenges that this country is facing, they believe that the current government, the current transition government of the day will be able to, you know, better their lives.
Mohammed, some people are suggesting that approving the draft constitution is almost a foregone conclusion. Is this what you are hearing on the ground, and that people will approve it and vote for yes?
Yes, absolutely. Malians are very religious people. We have two influential Islamic leaders here that are throwing their weight behind this referendum. They are calling on their supporters to vote overwhelmingly yes to this constitution. They are the president of the High Islamic Council, Usman Madani Haidara, and the Sheriff of Nyoro, Buye Haidara. So it is a foregone conclusion that this election will go in favor of the government.
But what about Mali's future in terms of the certainty about the role of the military, including the junta leader, Colonel Assimi Goïta?
Well, critics of this referendum are saying that the president will have absolute power over everything here, and they are criticizing the referendum. However, it seems as if the transition president is very, very popular among the people here.
Will this new constitution allow the president to stand for election, get off uniform and stand for election?
Well, that's what the opposition here is suspecting. We are not absolutely sure whether he will take off his uniform and pose his candidature for the presidency. Nobody knows that yet. He has not spoken about that.
You know, Sidi Touré, spokesman for the Party for the National Rebirth, or PARENA, described personalization of power a personality cult. He said if a new constitution is put in place, it must address these excesses, balance the powers instead of concentrating them in the hands of the president alone. Is that a true reflection of what is going on the ground?
Well, the government is only calling on the population to support them hook, line, and sinker. But the opposition, the N5 RFP here, that is the opposition movement that saw the back of Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, are absolutely critical of this election. However, we have to wait and see after the referendum what happens.
I understand the election or the results are supposed to be in within 72 hours. Is there any commitment that Malians will know whether they approved of the constitution within the 72 hours?
Well, they have put all measures in place so that the result can be out in 72 hours. In fact, they have installed most of the election officials all over, the country, where they will be able to organize a swift referendum and a swift result. So we have to wait and see.
What about the protection of the voters? Because people have raised concerns about security and that there could be attacks which could prevent voting in some areas.
Well, as of now, the Malian, the military junta here are rising in power here. They are absolutely very strong. So they have beefed up security in the entire country, except in some part of the north.
Mohamed Golfa is an independent journalist in Mali. He spoke with me from the capital, Bamako. In Sierra Leone, the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC, is calling on the police to immediately release all political detainees and supporters without preconditions ahead of their coming June 24 elections. This after expressing concern that their supporters are being targeted for arrest as part of what the party says appears to be a plan to intimidate and harass them. The police sharply deny the accusations. Supporters of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party say those arrested violated the country's laws. They are urging the police to ensure law and order is maintained for a peaceful vote. Lansana Dumbuya, General Secretary for the main opposition APC, tells me that his party wants an even playing field and peaceful elections without intimidation or harassment.
If you look at the number of political detainees or people who are detained or arrested and charged on political grounds simply because they were members of the opposition or they were one of those people who were out in the streets demonstrating peacefully. But for every time people come out to demonstrate peacefully, they will attack them. They will unleash police officers, military personnel, police officers with arms and military personnel on them, and they will kill them. Day before yesterday, they killed a good number of people around the country. Those shanty areas, that's where they targeted those people because they know that those people are against them. They went there. The people were sleeping. They were not. Even they went to their homes. How can you go to people's homes in the morning?
Has the APC documented those you said were allegedly killed? And have you presented that concern to the Inspector General of Police or the authorities for a thorough investigation? Because they could have been mere thugs who might have taken advantage of the situation to attack.
Peter, I can understand your situation. You are a journalist, so therefore you will want to play the devil's advocate to ask and try to be neutral, which is what you should do. But I can tell you that these are not any hooligans or any criminals out there trying to do. These are police officers who are attacking people, and the people they are attacking, they are not hooligans, they are not criminals, they are people whom, for example, just for example, apart from those other areas, there are other areas where when they went specifically for people who are APC chairmen and who are secretaries and those who are really, you know, working for the APC in those areas. Those are the people. It's not like they went there to target other people.
Lanzana, yeah. I heard reports that the police are doing their best to ensure law and order, and that those who violate the country's laws are those who are being arrested.
That is not true, Peter. That is not true. You know, sometimes it's difficult because I'm now the Secretary General of the APC. You know, it's like my word against their word. But forget me, Peter. Just find a neutral person who is not interested in politics. Search it out. You must have contacts here. Just try to get someone who is not involved in politics, you know, or in any political party, and then you ask the person. You know, I'm not anyone who is involved in political in any political party may have associated himself with either, you know, the SLPP or the APC, because we now have an alliance, and also they've got people who've gone to them, other parties who've gone to create an alliance with them. So if you have someone who is out of the political, you know, playing field, who is only concern about going to vote, that's it. If you get those, there are many of those people around. If you have those people, they will tell you exactly what is happening. These people are not criminals. They were not there to create any problems. That is why I'm saying, Peter, some of them were arrested at home. Some of them were taken naked to the stations, you know, with only a brief on, or the ladies with only pants on. What were they doing? How can they be creating troubles with only their pants or their brief? You know, sometimes we have to be truthful with what we say. The police will always say that we people obey the law. All we want is a free and fair, you know, non-violent and credible elections. If they can give the people, that's what the people want, and that's what the APC want, but they don't want that. That is why they have resulted to intimidation, harassment, you know, of the electorate. All they are doing, the arrest they are doing, is just for those people not to vote on polling day. Can you imagine, Peter, the 11th hour to election, the president went out to buy weapons, arms and ammunition, and he's brought them to the country just closer to elections. About 3 weeks to election, you brought arms into the country. Why? Why have you brought arms into the country?
But he still is the president, remember? Despite the fact that he's campaigning for re-election, his responsibility, according to the Constitution, does not stop until the day when his term officially expires, correct?
I agree with you, but you don't bring arms and ammunition 3 weeks to elections, Peter. I mean, you know better. You don't bring if you brought it 6 months or a year or two before that, then maybe you're doing your duty. But 3 weeks to elections, what other explanation is there? What other narrative can you read into that?
Lanzana Dumbuya is the General Secretary for the Main Opposition All People's Congress, or APC. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. In Nigeria, President Asiwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu has named 8 new advisers to his new government. The president, who was officially installed on May 29, took over from former President Muhammadu Buhari as he ended his 2 4-year terms in office. Tinubu named as his special advisor on security Nuhu Ribadu, the former chairman of the anti-graft agency, the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, or EFCC. He also named Dele Alake, a former commissioner of information in Lagos State, as special advisor to the president on special duties, communications, and strategy. The appointment was contained in an announcement on Thursday. For the latest development and analysis, I reach Jide Ojo. He is a columnist for The Punch, a major Nigerian newspaper.
Well, they are in order. Last week, the president got a note from the next National Assembly to appoint 20 special advisors, out of which he has appointed 8. It means that the government of Bola Ahmed Tinubu is taking shape. On Tuesday, 13th of June, we had the presiding officers of the National Assembly were elected, and as God will have it, the election gave victory to the preferred choices of the president and the All Progressive Congress, which is the ruling party in Nigeria. So things are taking shape. We look forward to more appointments in the coming days and perhaps more suspensions as well.
Some of the people he named in the eight, including Dele Aleke and Nuhu Ribadu, some people are saying are well known. How are Nigerians reacting to this?
This balance on us, and then this expected. Nuhu Ribadu, for instance, was a former chairman of Economic and Financial Crimes Commission. There have been speculations that he will be the next National Security Advisor, NSA, which is more or less the position for which he has been appointed now, Special Advisor on Security. So he takes over from a military general who has been there. That's if my reading of it is correct, because the designation is Special Advisor Security. But we do have ITA to National Security Advisor. So if you just juxtapose the words, it possibly means same. And Dele Alake was former commissioner for information and strategy in Lagos, served with Bola Tinubu while he was governor of Lagos State. And there have been speculation. In fact, the week of inauguration, there was a fake news that he has actually been appointed into this position of the spokesperson of the president. But today, as giving validity, this Thursday, 15th June, that speculation has now been validated.
Well, some people are saying that the president appears to have started on day one in trying to steer Nigeria on a different path. He has signed different acts into law, including the Electricity or Energy Act, that a lot of people are praising, that if this is well done, Nigeria should not be faced with electricity shortage.
You know, there is a saying in my part of the world that new brooms sweep clean, but old ones know all the crannies. So it's a new broom, it's a new sheriff in town, and these are expected that in the initial period of after inauguration, there will be appointments, there will be new things being done. You start to see the color and shape of the new government. And one of them is the electricity bill that was signed into law, which actually was derivative or to give more clarity to the alteration of the constitution, which was carried out by President Buhari early this year, which talks about devolution of power, moving the electricity from the exclusive legislative list to the concurrent legislative list. So this more or less expatiates the nitty-gritty of how that new electricity transmission, generation, distribution, who has the right to generate, who can, then the issues around off-grid and on-grid electricity. So all of that, the final details have not been, spelled out in this new electricity bill.
What about reports that he also says the government can no longer fund universities in Nigeria? Some people say that's a wake-up call that could make tertiary education very expensive.
There are mixed feelings. The unions are kicking. The Academic Staff Union of Universities, the Association of Academic Staff Union of Polytechnics, they are kicking. But the students' union bodies are praising. In fact, they were with the president the day after he signed that bill to appreciate him. But yes, there are concerns that the tuition of university tuition will rise, will be increased. But that is to be expected. The inflation in Nigeria is at 22.25%. You cannot expect that the way or the same amount you were paying 10, 15, 20 years ago is what you should continue to pay.
Jide Ojo is a columnist for The Punch, a major Nigerian newspaper. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. A group of African leaders visiting Ukraine and Russia are aiming to find a solution to the ongoing conflict. The leaders, who come from South Africa, Zambia, Comoros, and Egypt, met with senior Ukrainian officials and President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv. They are scheduled to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin and other senior officials after the visit to Ukraine. But some skeptics say they should have stayed home to help resolve insecurity concerns on the continent, especially the ongoing conflict in Sudan. In South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa is being criticized for failing to resolve the ongoing power crisis and other challenges. For reaction regarding the peaceful effort of the African leaders, I reach Evaristo Benyera. He is a political science professor at the University of South Africa, or UNISA.
This trip has been received with mixed reactions, not only in South Africa, but across Africa. There are some that are arguing that it is time now for African solutions for global problems, while others are raising issues such as those of lack of credibility and the lack of power to enforce any negotiation on the side of Africa. Essentially, they are arguing that Africa does not have a leverage over both Kyiv and Moscow, and that this trip is more of a diplomatic gesture than any real game-changing initiative. They point to the fact that real power in this case resides with the United States and its NATO allies.
Well, Professor Benyera, some South Africans are expressing concern that they wonder what the president will be doing there or achieving, especially when there are a myriad of challenges that South Africans face, including the notorious power outages.
One of the key characteristics of peace negotiation and conflict resolution is secrecy, as a way of confidence building. So we wouldn't be ordinarily aware of what they are carrying from Africa to Eastern Europe. That being stated, the problems that Africa are facing are mounting, and most of them are of African leaders' own doing. You spoke about the absence of electricity, which we call load shedding here. We have got a huge crisis of executive impunity. We also grapple, like any other part of the world, with the regulation of human movement. And the question then arises that if you cannot solve the problems, the seemingly smaller problems in your house, how then can you assist the village next door?
Talking about neutrality, there was an allegation made that South Africa or Pretoria and the African National Congress is a strong ally of Moscow, and for that matter, Russia, and that it will not be a neutral arbiter when it comes to mediation efforts. And that is why critics are saying President Ramaphosa shouldn't have even been included among African leaders who are trying to come up with a solution to the conflict in Ukraine. Your thoughts?
That is a very ahistorical argument, because if it is true, and if that is the international norm and standard, then the United States would have not been included or involved in the Israeli-Palestine negotiations. Most people know that the Israelis get a lot of funding from the United States, but that does not stop the United States, the successive regimes, from trying to mediate between Palestine and Israel, from Camp David and so on and so on. That being stated, neutrality in a war is a very contested phenomenon. Hence, others have come up with variations of neutrality, negative neutrality, positive neutrality. And what they do is that you cannot be wholly neutral when there is a conflict, because one way or the other, it impacts you.
The security detail of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa was reduced, and that brought a concern that perhaps the president's security could be in danger. How is this playing back in South Africa?
There are two ghosts that I would want to point out. We are here in Africa and we believe in ghosts. The first one is the ghost of Janusz Walus. Janusz Walus is a Polish national who assassinated Chris Hani, South Africa's would-be one of the leaders. He was assassinated by a Polish national, Walus unit. And this gentleman served his time here. He was released and he went back to Poland. And in Poland, there are reports coming to South Africa that he is a celebrated hero. Yet here in South Africa, he almost plunged this country into a civil war just on the eve of the end of apartheid. Had it not been for Nelson Mandela, who went out and appealed to people to be calm. So this is the first ghost. Then the second ghost that I want to talk about is the ghost of Lady S. This is that Russian ship that docked at Simonstown, ostensibly to carry weapons from South Africa to Russia. So this is the background to the treatment of South Africans in Poland.
Evaristo Benyera is a political science professor at the University of South Africa, or UNISA. He spoke with me from the South African capital, Pretoria. In Zambia, the vice president of the main opposition party, the Patriotic Front, or PF, says attempts to deregister the party is unconstitutional and an attack on the country's democracy. Given Lubinda says there appears to be a plan by the authorities to use state institutions, including the police and the registrar of parties, to intimidate and harass supporters of the PF. His remarks come after the Registrar of Societies warned that the PF risk being deregistered for failing to present a list of its officials, a major requirement for a political party to operate. But in response, the PF says the actions of the state institution are politically motivated, an accusation officials of the Registrar of Societies deny. For more about concerns of the PF over plans to deregister the group, I reached its vice president, Given Lubinda.
The law is very clear insofar as it demands that for an organization to be registered, the only requirement is the provision of a minimum of 10 office bearers, their names and their national registration card numbers, which we complied with. But to our surprise, the Registrar of Societies demanded that we also produce copies of NRCs, national registration cards, and we also submit copies of fingerprints authenticated by the police. Over and above that, they were also asking for the tribal villages from which these office bearers hail.
What makes you so convinced this action will be taken to deregister the Patriotic Front Party? What makes you so confident?
We're very sure because, look, every political party has sympathizers. We also have sympathizers, and we were informed that hadn't we provided that information last week, the past Tuesday, the government was to announce the deregistration. The fact that they haven't announced the deregistration is partly because we preempted them. But I don't think that we've come to the end of the journey. I am convinced beyond any reasonable doubt that they will try to find another reason to advance for the deregistration of the party.
Some supporters I spoke with are of the view that this is yet another attempt by the Patriotic Front to, one, demonize the government or the ruling party by making it unpopular by coming up with what they describe as straw people, because of the problems you have in your party that you are unable to solve, you project it on the ruling party. Again? How do you respond to that?
Isn't that an absurdity for anyone to claim that? Isn't it true that ever since February of this year, we've been running between the police and the registrar of societies concerning the growing requirement for us to meet for the registration of the party? Isn't it a fact that as late as Friday last week, we were commanded to provide biodata? How can anyone ever imagine that we are playing to the gallery over such a matter, when it is so glaringly clear that we are being commanded by the powers that be, by the government, to provide all these details on such a regular basis? The requirements for us have become elastic. They ask for one thing today and ask for another thing tomorrow. There are no internal conflicts that we're involved in which we're failing to handle. We are handling all our internal issues in a very amicable manner. There is one renegade member of the party who decided to take the party to court. Now, that is a matter that is before the judiciary, and it is not a matter that anyone can claim we're failing to solve, because it is now outside our remit. That is a matter that is going to be handled through the court system.
Talking about the court, some of your supporters are saying, if this is what you think, the Registrar of Societies is committing an illegality by asking quite things outside its jurisdiction, why don't you seek redress in court?
Anyone who knows about court processes in Zambia and in Africa, or globally, in fact, will know that for us to sit back and say this is not provided for in the law and therefore let's not comply because we challenge the registration of the party in court would be the most irresponsible decision. Because after the party is deregistered and we're going to fight the battle in court, it will take forever. It will take years.
Given Lubinda is the vice president of the Zambian main opposition party, the Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Egypt has been struggling to cope with a new wave of refugees from Africa after the latest round of conflicts erupted in Sudan and Ethiopia. The UNHCR appears to be having difficulties dealing with the large numbers of refugees, and Egyptian authorities slapped a visa requirement on Sudanese refugees trying to enter the country several days ago. For VOA, Edward Uranian reports from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Scores of recently arrived Sudanese refugees gather outside the UNHCR building in Cairo's normally quiet suburb of Zamalek. A refugee charity organization is handing out food and blankets to refugee families who appear tired and distraught from their recent ordeal, fleeing the ongoing fighting in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Agut, a 30-year-old Sudanese mother of five, lost track of her husband in the rush to flee Khartoum, and several of her children became ill during the disorganized trek to the Egyptian border and days of sleeping in unsanitary conditions. While she has found food and medical care for her children in Cairo, her husband is still missing, and she only has temporary shelter to live in. At the same time, dozens of Syrian refugees, most of whom fled to Egypt several years ago, gather outside a side door to the UN facility that is trying to help them. Most of them have jobs and a place to stay, but their situation remains precarious. Several told VOA that they were worried about being sent back to Syria now that the Arab League has normalized ties with Damascus. Miriam, a middle-aged woman from Damascus, tells VOA that she would be happy to return to Syria, but that she is worried that her 18-year-old nephew, who lives with her, will be drafted into the Syrian army if he returns with her. She says that she doesn't want to see her nephew Maher die in a new war in Syria. We've already lost half our family in the last year, she says, and I don't want to see any more of them die. Cairo is also awash with refugees from African countries that have witnessed conflicts in recent months or years. Andre, who comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo, tells VOA that militia fighters took him from his family and killed his father, who tried to stop them. He recounts being tortured and treated like a slave before he was finally able to flee to Uganda, then Sudan, and finally onto Egypt. Andre says that he has been struggling to get his situation sorted out with the UN Refugee Agency, but that no one wants to listen to him since he speaks French and not English or Arabic. He recounts sleeping outside buildings on many nights and worries that he could get deported back to Congo. Mohammed, a 50-year-old refugee from Tigray in Ethiopia, says that he has been fleeing from place to place since he was a young man. He had a successful business in Sudan before militia fighters stole his property and forced him to flee along with part of his family. He says that he can't go back because his business was confiscated and the militiamen who took it could decide to kill him to hide what they've done. Mohammed says that he still hasn't found a job in Egypt, but that his wife is helping to make ends meet by doing odd jobs and cooking for Egyptian families. Ahmed, a young man from Somalia, tells VOA that other Somalis have been harassing him because they don't like him and because they see him hanging around churches. He says that he's had to change his place of residence and change his phone number because other Somalis were trying to harm him. They don't like the fact that I'm Christian, he says, and they want to make an example of me to other Somalis. Sardo, a lanky young man from South Sudan, tells VOA that he was forced to flee Khartoum for Juba when the two countries split in 2010. He says that he didn't want to leave but had no choice. After several months in Juba, however, Sardo found himself in a South Sudanese jail. He describes his arrest, which happened while he was working at a store.
They come with eight commandos, and then they come down, they enter the gallery and say, this is the one. They hold my leg and they drop me into the car, and he put his leg on my neck to break my neck. Then I say, Jesus! Then I stay there more than 3 months. Suddenly, they release me at night. When we reach the place where it's a jungle, they open the door, they call my name, and they take me by my neck and drop me down. When I woke up, the dogs were running to me to bite me.
Sardo tells VOA that some of the same South Sudanese militiamen tracked him down to his home in Cairo as well, where they threatened to kill him again. Sardo fled to a new location and is still afraid to be seen during the day in his old neighborhood. Walid, a 20-something Sudanese man from Nuba Mountain, tells VOA that many young Sudanese refugees have turned to violence and roam around with gangs because they have no jobs, can't go to school, and their parents have lost control over them. A gang of young Sudanese men run around with knives in the street around a residential building in an outer Cairo suburb. The gang threatens passersby and robs a number of people before running off. Being a refugee is not easy, says Walid. Many young people can't cope with it and end up in jail. Some even take their own lives. A young Sudanese man jumped off a bridge earlier this year after he became depressed. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Ugandan security officials say suspected members of the Allied Democratic Forces rebel group Friday killed 41 students and left 8 injured in a school in Impondwe in western Uganda's Kasese district near the Congo border. According to Ugandan security and district officials, other locals in the region were also killed. The rebels torched 2 dormitories in the school and looted a food store during the attack. For VOA, Halima Tumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The suspected Allied Democratic Forces rebels attacked Peter Hunter's secondary school at 11 p.m. Friday. Muhindo Konjo Erifazi, the district chairman, detailed the attack to VOA.
It killed 24 students and 17 other students' bodies burned. That's a total of around 41. And we have 8 casualties.
Muhindi said the injured included 6 students, a teacher, and an elderly woman who reported that her husband and mother-in-law were also killed. 3 children are suspected to have been abducted. 2 other survivors are at a nearby health facility.
The Banaiji were able to arrest 2 people who had knives, and one of them has been caught this morning at the customs in Bondwe. And this one, they were in a injury, decided to put him out of action.
The Allied Democratic Forces rebel group is aligned with the Islamic State group and previously carried out attacks in Uganda. The attack was carried out 2 kilometers from the Congo border and close to the Virunga National Park. Defense spokesman Brigadier General Felix Kulaije spoke to VOA on what authorities are now doing.
This is signature of ADF, and the army has inserted the force to pursue, so to rescue those abducted. Secondly, the president has dispatched the Minister of Education to go and commiserate with the school community. And then the CDF and Commander Land Forces are going on the ground today to do the support assessment.
This is the first ADF attack on a school in 25 years. In June 1998, the ADF attacked Kichwamba National Technical Institute in Kabarole District, killing 58 students. At the time, students had locked themselves in a dormitory to avoid being abducted, and the rebels retaliated by setting the dormitory on fire. Close to 100 students were abducted. The Allied Democratic Forces, whose founder, Jamil Mukulu, has been imprisoned since 2015, operate in the Rwenzururu Mountains in Uganda and Congo. The group has been fighting against the Ugandan government since 1996. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
The side of success becomes handcuffs. That's why we're a sad bunch. How could we say we never had nothing when we had love? We living through Instagram pictures and videos. A filtered reality is beautiful. They even got our sisters. They mad for material. They give blood and sweat for a syllable. I've done enough. I have it all. But not everything, but everything I prayed for. And even if it ain't working out, I know God is still good, so we stay strong. No more external validation that I need, cause they can monetize all this air that I breathe. So it don't matter if I'm stuck or I elevate. Every day's a gift, so we celebrate. Yeah, this for my sisters on the ground working 2 jobs. This for my homies on the corner selling loose drawers. I know you're trying to stay alive, I salute you. Yeah, this for the ones who feel lost in this cold world. The devil trying to make you feel like it won't work. Burning while we soul search. Some days I feel strong and complete. Some days it gets heavy like my soul is obese.
So how do you approach all of these? You tell yourself that you're worth gold or unique. It's not over for me. There's still a lot of growth. I believe I survive all over with ease. Still I stand with black eyes and a couple of war scars. Doves over L's on a scorecard. Nobody in this world is designed like me. B-L-A-C-K-K-I-N-G. Man, I've been through the gutter. Came out harder. One thing about life, but till I go back to black, I let how I got not tied. I let the plan in the ball. I'm gonna have one knock. I'm gonna a shot. There's no one like you. This is my truth. Wouldn't change a thing about me, even if I could. Yeah, this all my sisters on the ground working two jobs. This all my homies on the corner selling loose drawers. I know you're trying to stay alive. I salute you. Yeah, this for the ones who feel lost in this cold world. The devil trying to make you feel like it won't work. Just keep the fire burning while we soul search.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C.
Girl, we say
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Tell your friends about VOA Africa, music, sports, and news.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Hove, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a man who hangs around a beautiful girl without saying a word ends up fetching water for guests at her wedding. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.